Hello, Bigfoot fanatics, and welcome to the newest Bigfoot podcast, Breaking Down Bigfoot. I am so excited to get into this. Not only will this podcast dive into some encounters that individuals have had with the elusive Bigfoot, but we will also be going into Bigfoot's historical context so we can understand why he is so popular around the world and how he has maintained this popularity, making him an icon. Personally, I have watched episode after episode of Bigfoot encounters, or researchers going out into the woods in hopes of finding Bigfoot. However, these shows lack context of how he became so universally well known. This podcast will be different because we're proving how Bigfoot became an icon, rather than trying to prove if he's real or not. Learning this background information could help individuals learn more about his origin story, which relates to how he's become an American icon. And he definitely is beloved. So, let's look at what we already know. He's a big, elusive, bipedal, humanoid creature. You may have heard him to have brown or black fur, be very hairy, and even aggressive at times on some encounters. And obviously, his massive footprints. But do you know how he became an icon? Do you know the theories created to explain the continued interest in the creature? No? Okay, let's dive into that now.
He remembers.
He's Bigfoot, he's Bigfoot. He'll eat you with his taters and his greens. He's Bigfoot, he's Bigfoot. Cut to Bigfoot, you're a fleshy tangerine.
Boom, boom.
He goes barefoot, so he's always free to stomp ya. He carries a big stick so he can womp ya. Sharpens up his teeth so he can chomp ya. So I think you better flee, cause I'm telling you that he's Bigfoot.
Let's begin with some historical information about Bigfoot's origin and why he is so feared when individuals stumble upon him alone in the woods. Something interesting found in my research is that the Bigfoot of folklore that we're about to talk about is not the same as our modern day Bigfoot. Basically, Bigfoot went through a transformation, which we're going to look at in this podcast. First, he was feared, but now he's a celebrity of sorts. Our first researcher is Mr. Peter Dendel, who studied English and philosophy and now teaches at Penn State University. He teaches two classes at Penn State, Introduction to American Folklore, as well as the Human Condition. Interestingly enough, Bigfoot's origin did not begin with him being called Bigfoot. Rather, he was just known as a large man-like creature that stalked the forest. Bigfoot was basically just humans' fear of the unknown and the creatures around them, when they were more vulnerable to the vast wilderness. Peter Dendel has some very interesting points to make about this fear of large creatures unknown in the woods. His theory of Bigfoot is very interesting to look into. Dendel argues that this fear that people have towards Bigfoot is not actually fear over the creature, but rather a biological fear of the dark and unknown. He says that Bigfoot triggers a primordial fear in humans. Let's dig into what this means. Basically, there has been a biological fear encoded in humans' DNA from the earliest times. The earliest peoples feared the nighttime, associating danger with the dark. They were aware that there were large creatures that may be stalking around them, but they couldn't see them. Therefore, in the present day, individuals still experience this fear of being vulnerable. As children, we had nightlights to make us feel safer. The same theory applies to the wilderness. We fear what we cannot see in the darkness of night or when we are vulnerable alone in the woods. This then relates to how Bigfoot became so well known, as Dendel argues that Bigfoot is a physical, concrete manifestation of this fear. Now, let's look at a quote from Dendel. He says, "The construction of monsters in art, literature, and mythology seem to provide a mechanism for articulating human qualities that must be publicly repudiated, perhaps even exorcised, through the very act of externalizing." Let's break this down into simpler terms. It's a way for us to feel safer, or as Dendel says, a way for us to externalize this fear, if we have an object or person that we know we should be fearing. Rather than being scared of some unknown entity, we have identified it, making us feel more secure and less vulnerable. There is no longer the factor of the unknown if we can identify it. Something funny from Dendel is that he says in modern day times, humans are still more afraid of the dark or growling and teeth than more contemporary dangers such as heart disease or car accidents. However, I do not want you, the listeners, to think that I am saying that Bigfoot is not real and is just a metaphor for the instilled biological fears we possess. There have been many sightings and other experiences that cannot be thrown off the table by just saying Bigfoot is a manifestation of our fears. So, the next thing I want to talk about is, how do sightings of Bigfoot play into his popularity? When you think of Bigfoot sightings, what comes to mind? Perhaps indigenous accounts from different tribes, possibly in the Pacific Northwest? Interestingly enough, Bigfoot legends are international and actually started in Europe, then made their way to North America. I know, crazy, right? So, we are going way back to the Middle Ages in Europe. Legends have been told of creatures called wild men that lived in the wilderness and mountains of several European countries. Something interesting about these folklores is that they relate to Peter Dendel's theory in many ways. A quote from an article titled Images of the Wild Man Inside and Outside Europe by Gregory Morris writes, "Both in medieval and earlier folk representations, wild men were associated with wild places beyond areas of normal human habitation, most notably forests and mountainous regions, where they are frequently depicted as inhabiting caves. During the Middle Ages, vast stretches of forest were alive with unfortunates, including lunatics, eccentric recluses, criminals. At this time, wildness and insanity were almost interchangeable terms, so the forest-dwelling social outcast could be regarded as a kind of wild man. This relates to Dendel's theory because what society viewed as odd or scary, they identified with the word wild. It was another way for society to label people they viewed as different as others. Therefore, these folklores can be seen as another manifestation of fear. We are now shifting gears to early sightings in North America coming from indigenous tribes. Looking at Joyce Bynum's book titled Bigfoot, A Contemporary Belief Legend, she explains some of these early stories. She recounts the sighting saying, "In North America, early trappers and settlers in the Pacific Northwest began to hear stories told by Indians of a large, hairy, man-like creature called Sasquatch or Bigfoot, and soon newspapers carried accounts of sightings of such a creature by both Indians and whites. Therefore, Bigfoot was now not only a primordial fear, but was also a shared fear that brought different groups together. Early European colonizers shared accounts with Native Americans and vice versa. This was a shared fear that brought two very different groups to a similar feeling and shared experience. This is one reason why Bigfoot is so popular, this communal terror that is triggered by the unknown. However, another reason is that when people start sharing this experience they have, it creates interest and intrigue around the creature, fueling more coverage of stories, and therefore more people becoming aware of the creature and interested in him. Let's look at another sighting that is more recent. Because of this folklore that was shared by the indigenous tribes, they fueled Bigfoot's popularity to the point where modern-day sightings were recorded and therefore propagated the spread of Bigfoot information and stories. Looking at the website Top 10 Most Convincing Bigfoot Sightings, it discusses a Pennsylvania sighting accompanied by a picture of a large footprint saying, "Locals in Johnstown, PA were baffled by a footprint measuring 17.75 inches found near a residential home in 1980. According to the Associated Press, the footprint coincided with reports of strange noises and a strong but unusual odor in the area." End quote. There are some commonalities between both sightings, large, unknown, but more importantly, it shows that Bigfoot's perception from society is changing from fear to intrigue. People are sharing their experiences and making more people interested. I mean, the two sightings we just compared were hundreds of years apart, yet the popularity of Bigfoot stayed the same, showing his icon status. Now, we have seen how the legend of this creature began and how it gained popularity and momentum by more sightings. But now we're shifting gears to the first recorded sighting where he received the name Bigfoot. So, we're shifting gears to focus on accounts from British Columbia. Looking at the book, Abominable Science, Origins of the Yeti, Nessie, and Other Famous Cryptids, by Daniel Loxton and Donald Prothero, talks about this first written account of Bigfoot. The authors write, "There is a ground zero for Bigfoot, a place and time when the legend can be said to have originated. In the 1920s, in British Columbia's lush Fraser Valley, a man named John W. Burns collected the original eyewitness reports of encounters with Sasquatch in North America. All of modern Bigfoot mythology grew from this regional seed, spreading across the North American continent and beyond, mutating and hybridizing with later reports, hoaxes, and popular fiction." But this is not even the most interesting part. The main reason that the Bigfoot popularity grew was from the publicity stunt that Burns' town, Harrison Hot Springs, did as a result of his written accounts. The town wanted $600 in funding and needed a project to be eligible for the money. They decided to have a Bigfoot hunt and see who could find Sasquatch first. Well, this made Bigfoot take off in popularity in North America. A man named Rene DeHinden, who decided to go searching for Bigfoot, commented on the publicity stunt, saying, "Despite the silliness of much of the press coverage, this was the watershed moment for the Sasquatch. As DeHinden put it, the widespread publicity appears to have been the genesis of the serious consideration that the Sasquatch might indeed be a creature of considerably more substance than myth." This shows the continued media coverage of Bigfoot and once again shows his status changing from fear to intrigue. The more sightings share with the public, the larger Bigfoot's fan base grows. It shows how folklore passed down by word of mouth changed to sightings being spread over television, radios, and newspapers. This then relates to our next idea, which is how Bigfoot has maintained his iconic status, which is ultimately through the continued exposure and media attention that he attracts. Obviously, technology advanced, which has allowed for more coverage of sightings, but also allowed researchers to take people along with them on their hunt for Bigfoot. This adds a new level to the Bigfoot exposure, but also increases and maintains his popularity. Before we get into examples of Bigfoot TV shows, I want to talk about Linda Milliken, who was also interested in this same idea about Bigfoot that we've been talking throughout this podcast, which is not about if he's real or not, but rather how he gained such popularity. As mentioned, a fueling factor of his popularity comes from sightings. Linda Milliken's research is used in Joyce Bynum's book, who comments, "A few recent accounts in Ohio and Pennsylvania link Bigfoot with UFOs, but Linda Milliken believes the accounts have been influenced by the printed publications of this link. She further notes that Bigfoot the animal has not yet changed into Bigfoot the alien, at least not in Ohio." The influx of paranormal activity and interest in this field heightened Bigfoot's popularity. People assume if aliens and UFOs are real, then we may have creatures lurking around us in the woods. This also reinforces our icon points made earlier in the podcast because Milliken believes that the more sightings people talk about, publish books about, talk about on TV, it's only going to fuel the fascination more. To continue, Milliken quotes Colin Board. Colin Board wrote about UFO sightings and other paranormal occurrences with his wife Janet in the 70s and 80s. Milliken quotes a sighting from Board saying, "Hairy ape-like creature who stands between 7 to 8 feet tall. The massive size and depths of its footprints attest to its size, but sometimes these footprints reveal 5 toes and at other times 3 toes. Generally, the creature is described as being reclusive and not a danger to humans, but sometimes it is reported to have invaded human territory or behaved quite aggressively." She is sharing this account from Colin Board, but ties it to the idea that sightings such as these fueled the interest of the creature. The more people talking about Bigfoot, writing stories about Bigfoot, it's only going to increase his popularity and keep him at an iconic status. It also reinforces the idea that the intrigue of Bigfoot is still growing. People from all different backgrounds are interested in Bigfoot research and the possibility of its existence. Every new generation has a rekindled wonder about the creature. Whether you believe in Bigfoot or not, the sightings and accounts keep individuals intrigued for sure. Okay, now we are going to get into something very interesting. We are going back to the idea of Bigfoot TV shows. Because of the media exposure and heightened interest in the creature, there are now Bigfoot researchers who spend their time documenting sightings and occurrences in hopes of understanding the creature. This shows how Bigfoot is an icon because there is a whole field of study around its existence. I'm going to share a clip of a primatologist conducting fieldwork in hopes of capturing a Bigfoot sound. This came from a show called Expedition Bigfoot. The fact that this audio comes from a documentary once again shows the popularity of Bigfoot and the growing interest. Bigfoot has so many shows about him, proving he's an icon. But anyway, let's listen to this audio.
Here we go. You're facing an animal that you know nothing about. There's no manual telling you that what you should do is stand still and hold your ground, or climb a tree, or run as fast as you can in the other direction. It's an unknown. But if we get a response, I'm going in after it. That's what I would do in the field in Africa, and that's what I'm going to do here tonight. We didn't get any response on that one, so we're going to try it again. Sometimes, just because we're not hearing anything, doesn't mean there isn't something out here. Hear that? Oh my God.
After playing a Bigfoot howl into the forest, primatologist Dr. Maria Mayer has just heard something. Return the call.
The primatologist conducting the experiment reinforces our points that we've made throughout the podcast so far. She labels Bigfoot as an unknown, which we have also, and it shows a firsthand reaction of the intrigue over this unknown entity. You can hear her excitement, which plays into his popularity. Milligan's theory then applies to the present day and how Bigfoot is being used within the media in a contemporary manner. Not only is Bigfoot gaining popularity by more exposure, but his status is once again changing in society, from fear to intrigue, and now almost an advertisement and celebrity figure. Bigfoot has basically transcended from his status as a biological predator to media propaganda. And of course, this only reinforces his icon status. Looking at Gregory Forth's article, Imagining Bigfoot, Forth argues, "The tradition of Bigfoot trash fiction has been translated and transformed by writers of legitimate fiction, often adopting the tabloid convention to their imaginative needs, exploiting the structure and the tradition to create something more profound than the source material from which they begin." This is so interesting because it shows that Bigfoot is no longer this feared creature stalking the forest, but he is now almost a famous figure in our media. He has become this icon that everyone knows and has reached a level of stardom that only some can dream of. This is the main way that Bigfoot has reached the popularity that he has maintained for so long, being used in different facets of media. I am very excited to share some examples of Bigfoot being used in media today. Our first example, a post-election issue of the Weekly World News from November 22, 2004, exclaimed on its cover, "World's first hooker Bigfoot tells all," and featured a photo of Bill Clinton and Ted Kennedy, in a limo, being propositioned by a shaggy-haired, mini-skirted Bigfoot prostitute. What's funny is, the author goes on to explain that the Bigfoot propaganda was actually a form of advertising for a new gossip rag, where the author was exposing a lot of dirt and names. The author was aware that using Bigfoot in the title of his article would help bring in readers and gain more attention. I'm sure anyone reading this at the time thought, oh my goodness, a Bigfoot hooker? How? What? I know I would read this article with an intriguing title such as this. So Bigfoot is basically a walking advertisement. Another example that is hysterical is how Bigfoot has been used to create merchandise amidst the COVID-19 pandemic. So, if you go on Amazon, you can purchase a Bigfoot t-shirt for $19.95. The Bigfoot t-shirt has a very interesting graphic of a shadowed Bigfoot walking from the side with the shadow of trees behind him in the distance. The shirt says, Social Distancing World Champion. You can also get the same t-shirt with a different blurb saying, Hide and Seek World Champion. In addition to this, if you scroll down on the Amazon webpage and look under the tab, Options Related to This Item, there is a plethora of Bigfoot t-shirts and other merchandise. For example, you can wear a cozy-looking Christmas t-shirt featuring a dabbing Bigfoot in a Santa hat. The title of the t-shirt says, Funny Bigfoot Sasquatch Dabbing Dropping Santa Bags of Gif Raglan Baseball Tee. A final example of a Bigfoot shirt has the bold wording across the front which says, I'd rather be squatchin', and is titled on Amazon as, I'd rather be squatchin' funny official gone Bigfoot Sasquatch Hunter t-shirt. Something important to note is that in the title of the shirts, it says Bigfoot and Sasquatch, showing the two common names typically used in North American folklore, which relates to the historical context of Bigfoot. Anyway, a final example of Bigfoot merchandise comes from Walmart.com. They are selling Bigfoot Halloween costumes as well as onesie pajamas. They boast similar titles to the Amazon merchandise such as Halloween Sasquatch Bigfoot Costume Men's T-shirt, which sells for $16.95. Bigfoot is a money-making machine in our society. Overall, these examples show how the legend and folklore has been incorporated in the media, merchandise, and propaganda of Bigfoot, and also has a tie to the historical context of Bigfoot. Bigfoot is an icon, because he can stand the test of time and popularity, and also morph his status and usage in society. As mentioned, he went from a feared beast of folklore and legend to a staple of American TV shows, for example, the Animal Planet show, Finding Bigfoot. He has almost become a character of America and symbolizes our interest in the unknown. America is innovative and strives to move forward and grow as a nation, and Bigfoot fits into that. He changes and morphs throughout history and symbolizes this innovation to discover something new. I hope this was a new side to Bigfoot that you might never have seen before. I hope it showed new context into the popularity and icon status of Bigfoot. We dove into the historical context of the creature and where the myths and legends stem from. But don't get discouraged. This doesn't mean that Bigfoot is not real. Wait, what was that? Uh-oh, I think he heard us talking.